Welcome to the Hot Law Podcast, where we discuss the hot topics in today's news from the legal perspective. This podcast is brought to you by the Beaulieu Law Firm, PC. This podcast is not legal advice and is strictly for educational and entertainment purposes. For legal advice, visit the contact page at www.beaulieulawfirm.com.
And yes, welcome to the Hot Law Podcast, episode 7. I am your host, Max Beaulieu. Welcome, welcome. We have a very special episode for you today, but I am a sports and entertainment attorney, business sports and entertainment needs. Follow me at www.beaulieulawfirm.com. That's www.beaulieulawfirm.com. All right, welcome, welcome. Real quick, I want to give a shout out to my interns, Yuloma Yukoma and Mason Bailey, for doing great legal research for the podcast and my law firm. They've been very, very helpful. So you're listening, guys. I love you guys. Appreciate all the work that you do. All right, let's jump right in. Today, we will be talking about the legend of Kobe Bryant and what he's meant to the world of sports and the legal aftermath of his death, his unfortunate death. It's been a tragic. But first, let me introduce you to my guest, Jeff J. And you might know him from Power After Hours. Jeff, welcome.
What's going on, bro? How's everything?
Everything's good, man. I'm glad to have you. So tell the world a little bit about yourself, what you're doing, and what you about.
All right. Well, I'm a host, a podcaster, a producer. I do everything in the realm of sports and entertainment. So recently, I just wrapped up my Power After Hours podcast. It was the best power podcast you've ever heard. And since the show ended, we ended as well. We're still thinking about whether or not we're covering the spinoffs or everything, but that was really an end of an era. And one of the reasons why I got into media was because, like, professionally, was because of that fan podcast that I started. So
that's amazing.
I do a lot of entertainment stuff, like red carpets, interviews and stuff, producing on the other end, a lot of digital content I've made in sports. So I cover the whole gamut.
All right, man. Great. You're a very talented brother. I've been following you for a while now, so glad to have you. So let's jump in. On Sunday, January 26, a helicopter crash in Calabasas, California. The crash took the lives of the NBA legend Kobe Bryant and his 13-year-old Gianna and 7 other passengers. The crash occurred about 45 minutes after the helicopter took off from Jane Wayne Airport in Santa Ana, California. Bryant was reportedly traveling with his daughter to one of her basketball games, and I think some of her daughter's teammates and parents were there on the plane as well. Now, the key fact that sticks out to me from this whole story, and this is something I'm going to be addressing throughout the show, is that all the police and sheriff helicopters were grounded because it was too cloudy, yet his plane had some kind of clearance to take off. So that's the key thing that bothered me. That's going to be a theme throughout the podcast. But Jeff, where were you when you first heard the news?
So I was covering Super Bowl in Miami, and I flew out on Sunday, and I landed, and me and my guy was we get off, and my boy shows me, he's looking at his phone, and I could tell like something was crazy because he kept looking up, looking down, looking up, looking down. And I was like, what's up? He was like, I can't believe what I'm reading right now. And I was like, what? And he shows me the TMZ article. And I was like, nah, I refuse to believe it. So since we both work in sports, we go right into our Slack channels and we're checking and checking and checking. And all we see is just reports coming in and different reports and this report. And then finally, like after 20, 30 minutes, it all but was confirmed that it happened. And I just remember being in shock. One, because I just got off of a flight, right? So that's just something that really sticks by you, where you kind of have to suspend disbelief when you're on a plane. You're up there already, so whatever happens is literally going to happen. Mm-hmm. So I've kind of quelled my fear of flying for the most part, but now, you know, getting off that plane and getting hit with that news was just like one thing. And I wasn't a Laker fan. I respected Kobe. I wasn't a Kobe fan like that. Like, right. You know, he wasn't my favorite player, whatever the case may be. But I would say he had a profound impact on me as a sports fan,
right?
Because when he came into the league, we're like a few years apart, like give or take.
Right.
So it's like me coming into adulthood was kind of like him coming into adulthood in the NBA. So you get to witness a 20-year career from a mature perspective, not just like a little kid watching Michael Jordan, mm-hmm. from a mature perspective and just knowing what he meant to the game, where he was the dude that would take the impossible task of being the next Michael Jordan, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. Like he took that charge and he took it in every single way. He was the heir apparent, like literal heir apparent to Michael Jordan. So, and just the way he played, his mentality and all of that, where he was putting up every shot regardless and he was going to do what it took to win, is stuff that you could love him for it, hate him for it, but you had to respect him. And I think he's one of those people who you knew it when he was gone, it was going to make an impact, but in the tragic way that it happened, and then, you know, it was only heightened when you found out his daughter was there, and then the seven other people with him and why they were going. That whole impact just leads to the level of the tragedy and what everybody felt and how and just like the incredulous nature of it, where you just didn't want to believe it, right? So all of that had a profound impact on me, and it just helps me like to remember and appreciate the greatness that we see in any aspect while it's here.
I agree with you. Yeah, well put. For me, I was at my girlfriend's house. We were chilling on the couch, and my sister, she lives out in LA, and you know, she WhatsApp me, and she's like, Maxine, I was like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. She's saying, tell me, Kobe Bryant passed away. He died. I'm like, I didn't believe it. I'm out. So it was TMZ, and no disrespect to TMZ, but you know, they're not CNN or anything.
Right.
So I was like, I'll wait. And I just didn't, I looked at all the channels, couldn't see anything. And much like yourself, you're trying to dive in, find out what's going on. And ABC starts reporting, CNN starts reporting. I was like, I can't believe it. And like you know, I wasn't a Laker fan really, but to me, I was like, this hits differently. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect to feel so sad, but I think it's just how young he was. And the thing is, and I'll explain it to people, you know, most of our sports legends, you know, they live on for a long time.
Right.
You know, Bill Russell's still here.
Still here.
Who else is still? Kareem's still here. Magic getting old. Jordan's birthday just passed. And this guy, you know, he's gone.
Right.
And at such an early age. And, you know, for me, my fanhood relationship with Kobe, I hated number 8.
Right.
Oh, man. I just thought he was that arrogant guy. But after what he's been through with his teams and stuff. But number 24, I liked. You know, he was a bit more mature. I don't want to say humble. I think nobody's really humble when you're that talented. I think you'd have to have a sense of cockiness. But, you know, he kind of tempered his cockiness down a little bit. But I loved retired Kobe.
Yeah.
I really love retired Kobe. I thought I thought he was going to have difficulty in the afterlife of his career, but he seems to be thriving. The stuff he's doing for women's sports and his daughters and his business investments and many more things I'm finding that's coming out. And I'm just like, man, this guy was really going to do something.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like what Magic Johnson is doing, but maybe at another different level. And it was just taken away. And I was just really starting to admire, like, kind of relate to him, because I'm just more of a business guy, and I'm going to relate to this guy how he does business, going to follow it, and then it's got taken away. It's a shame.
Yeah, man. It's like my guy Matthew Cherry, who just won the Oscar for Hair Love, the short animated series. It's like he said, may our second act be just as great as Kobe's was, because he was just charging up. He was just getting started.
And
I felt like he was going to show us, especially like Black men, the way to live your second life, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's the one of the biggest tragedies of this, that he was only, what, 41?
41, mm-hmm.
You're not even living yet, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's difficult to grasp when your mortality hits in that way, mm-hmm. where it reminds you that our names are written in a book somewhere at the beginning and the end, but nobody's told us yet. So when it happens, it's like, shit, I should have been prepared, and you're never really going to be prepared. So just try to live your life to the fullest.
Absolutely. I agree with you. And I think John was going to be special too.
Yeah,
and,
man. You 13 years old. That's just not right, yo. No, that's just not right.
It's not right. Anyway, well, you know, Mamba Mamacita, rest in peace. Yep. So, you know, but here's the thing. How could this have happened? You know, like I said before, I'm going to repeat it again. The police helicopters and the sheriff helicopters were told to be grounded because it was too cloudy. Mm-hmm. And to me, I see it as, you know, if the police cars and sheriff cars are saying, hey, it's too slippery, we can't even be out there, I shouldn't be out there driving. You know, so I'm just like, if the police can't be out there to protect us from crime because it's too dangerous to be out there, why am I going to go out and drive? You know, so and I understand in doing some research on this, you know, Kobe, he uses the helicopter a lot because it really cuts down on the traveling time. And, you know, L.A. traffic could be crazy.
Yeah.
So he wanted to be there for his family, for his daughters, because he's always on the road. And his helicopter life became just part of his life. But still, you know, I just believe this could have been avoided. It could have been a situation, hey, Mr. Bryant, can't fly today, too cloudy. It's my judgment not to go. Would have saved them. Okay, they couldn't go to their games, but at least they're still alive. But that's just crazy to me. But let's dive a little bit more into the facts. Now, the aircraft in question is a Sikorsky S-76, and it was built in 1991 and reportedly owned by the Island Express Corporation. And the Island Express Corporation offers air tours to its customers, but since the tragic accident, it's taken down their website and ceased operation altogether. Now, another thing that stands out to me is how old this plane is. 1991, that's what, like almost 29 years old?
Wow.
29-year-old plane.
Yeah, it's a almost 30-year-old copter, yeah.
Yeah, so I drive, I don't do aircraft. My car, once your car starts hitting 10 years old, it's a little, you know, but you have an old vehicle like that up in the air. I don't know. I haven't done enough research to talk about what's the average age of aircraft up there. But to me, when it comes to technology and mechanical things, you know, they get old fast. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that just bothers me that something that old could be up there in the sky.
Well, do we know if a 30-year-old helicopter is like functional? Like what's the mileage, what's the wear and tear on it?
Oh, that's true. That's a good point. You know, mileage and wear and tear. Yeah, that's true.
Because I thought that it was his private one. Like, I thought that he had bought it and it was just the one that he used. Because if it's only, he's the only one that's using it, then, you know, there's pros and cons of that too. Like, I have no clue about helicopter maintenance, but I know, like, my car that I have now is 20 years old. Mm-hmm. But it's a, you know, it's a Acura, so it's a well-made car, and it's something that I'm not driving all the time.
Yes.
So,
okay.
You know, where the average miles a year in the US is probably like 12 or 15,000, I might put 10 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And those aren't like harsh miles. So, you get more mileage out of it, but then at the same time, after 10 years, after 15 years, cars just get old. It's just like how people talk about their knees after 30.
Yeah.
Like, you know, your joints.
Yeah.
Like, you just, the cosmetic stuff starts to wear down. And if you're not maintaining it,
mm-hmm.
you're going to break it. It's going to break down. But I would figure that a 30-year-old helicopter has to have normal maintenance where they're switching out old parts, putting in new parts, and making sure everything's up to standard.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, I don't have the details as to how well kept the aircraft was, but I just know it's old.
Right.
And so that just scares me. But we don't know about that, so we won't speculate too much. But it does stand out how old it is. Now, the Sikorsky brand is a subsidiary of the company called Lockheed Martin. The aircraft was reportedly a top-of-the-line choice for private travel and air ambulance services. But still, you know, the fact that that particular plane was built at that year, it still bothers me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I think the pilot was, the name of the pilot was Aria Zoboyan. Pardon me if I'm messing up your name. So rest in peace. I know he passed away too. But, I had, you know, my interns, you know, they do good work. You know, they were able to get an interview with a helicopter, with an air traffic control person, and didn't want to be named. So I understand that, but gave us some special insight.
Mm.
Now the detail of the facts is that, the pilot, requested a special visual flight rules clearance, a SVFR. So generally VFR, is a means the pilot assumes all responsibility for separation and terrain and other aircraft. But generally it means is that, listen, you're requesting like, hey, I think it's good. I can fly. I can handle it. It's my call. It's my judgment. Just give me clearance to go and let me do it. And air traffic control would be like, okay, well, if you feel like you can go, then you can go ahead. Again, I have a problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
all the other helicopters, police enforcements were down. I don't feel that the I've been seeing interviews too. Other helicopter pilots say that generally the helicopter pilot has the last word as to whether to go or not. And you know, sometimes people think they're a little bit brave, and you know, they could get a little bit brave, and you know, they could think they could do things, but and maneuver certain things. But I'm just like, well, I think it should be more of a team effort in terms of the decision making. So I don't know, that kind of bothers me a little bit. But only pilots can request SVFR clearance, and the visibility requirements do not apply to helicopters. So when a helicopter pilot requests that clearance, the decision is entirely upon them. Now, generally, helicopter pilots have more flexibility compared to planes when using this kind of clearance because of the maneuverability. They could, you know, go in and out. They could land anywhere, whereas planes, they can only take off and on tarmacs.
Right.
So they're a bit more strict. Now, you know, that kind of clearance is not uncommon, but still, I think it should be used less. I think it should be more of a air traffic control kind of thing. You know, they could kind of oversee the situation. Now, towards the end of the flight, the pilot of the helicopter attempted to contact the radar facility at ATC for the airspace, but was informed by the ATC or air traffic control that his helicopter was too low for radar coverage. Mainly because it was very cloudy. Because it was way too low because he couldn't really get up into the clouds. And fortunately, crash occurred and the communication was fuzzy before the crash. Now, what I remember the details is that, and some of the details is that when you get into the clouds, you lose sense of what's front, back, up, and down because it's just clouds. You know, you're just walking to a blank canvas. So you don't know where your sense of direction is. And, you know, and we are not sure how up to date the technology was on that plane. Cause it was so old. So you're flying into clouds. And so I just want to ask your experience. You know, you've flown in regular planes, not airplanes, but like, have you ever had, like you've been through turbulence, right? Tell me some of the turbulence stories and stuff. What have you heard?
Oh, man. So flying into Las Vegas is always a turbulent flight because you're going over mountains or something like that. Oh, like because of the mountains or whatever, because you got to cross through Colorado, I guess coming from New York, right? Yeah. So for me, it's always been a turbulent flight. The first time I ever flew to Vegas, it was like a nighttime flight and I've never felt turbulence. Like we were coming in, like towards the landing, and it felt like the plane was jumping up and down, up and down, up and down. I never felt turbulence like that in my life. Every time I've flown and it's rained or something, that's caused turbulence. I've been in aborted landings. If you don't know what that is, it's basically when the plane touches the runway and for whatever reason goes right back up in the air. So that's happened to me a couple of times where the plane is about to land, it hits the runway, and then they speed up and take back off and try it again. A lot of times why they do that is because they have a mark that they have to hit when they land. Uh-huh. So it's like past that mark, it's generally might be unsafe for you to try to land and brake. Oh. Let's say if you're, for those who are familiar with Kennedy Airport or any airport that's around water, if you're coming into the airport, you may if you miss that mark, you may go cascading into the water, or you may crash into other planes or crash into a wall or something like that. So they have like a safety mark on the floor. So if they miss it, at least that's what I was told, they go back up. Like the one in Vegas, it felt like we were good. And I hear the engine revving. I'm like, that sounds like the engine is revving. Why is the engine revving? We go right back up in the air and he basically does a 10-minute loop to come back. And it was funny because the first 5 minutes, he didn't say nothing. The pilot didn't say anything. And we're all looking at each other like, all right, why did you not stay on the floor? Like, why are we back in the air? And then he comes in, sorry. He gave whatever explanation and then was like, no, we're going to try this again.
Yeah.
And then he did it. But that's the most extent I've had with flights and like turbulence. Mm-hmm. I've never been in a helicopter and I don't plan to. And that's before any of this. I've never had an appetite. Yeah. The only time, if I'm in a helicopter, then you should be concerned because I'm getting airlifted somewhere. Oh. That's the only way that I at this point, or it's got to be a dire emergency for me to want to get. I don't want to take a helicopter for leisure.
Yeah. I want to take it for leisure. Yeah, you know, I was, you know, sometimes you see people on the gram and, you know, they have their feet out. You want to take nice pictures. Yeah, I'm like, cool. Yeah, that's cool. But and after this, you know, that further confirmed that it's just they're just too. I mean, not to cast an opinion on the helicopter industry, you know, just personal for me. I'm just like, I don't know. But in terms of my experience of flying, it's airplanes are so big and they're sturdy and they get into the clouds and they still dip.
Right.
You know, and I remember I saw an Instagram post. There was this they were serving drinks, but then they were in clouds and it really got shaky. And then the plane dipped really hard. And
I've heard about that. Yeah.
As you see the flight attendants, they're in the air. You know, I mean, their bodies hit the ceiling, you know, and the drinks all spilled all over. And to me, I'm just like, you know, you're driving, you have the propellers flying into the thickness, milky cloud.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of like, what it is, it's kind of like you're grabbing the propellers and then this helicopter spinning under you and everything's going crazy. And so again, I just feel that this could have been, there should have been better standards and better precaution that should have been taken again. But not really to cast aspersions, but this is still bothersome. So what's next? So I think what's next in terms for the what's next generally is from the potential fallout is that higher training for helicopter pilots. I believe that's necessary. I think there should be as well as more exhaustive check down procedures for pilots and air traffic controls for such scenarios. I think there's a lot to learn from this. I think it should be more of a team effort. And I think it should be a situation where there should be more no's than yes.
Right.
You know, along those lines. And obviously, the lawsuits.
Right.
All right. So the lawsuits are going to come about. And generally, we think, aside from the passengers and their families, but we're going to focus on the Bryan family. They could bring the lawsuits. There could be several people liable. Now, if Kobe owned the plane, now I understand that he chartered it. Mm-hmm. But if Kobe owned the plane, the family members could probably sue Bryan or the Bryan estate because he owned the plane. He brought them in and then something happened. So and then, you know, they all passed away. So he could possibly be liable if he owned it.
Mm-hmm.
But since he chartered it, I think that's less of a liability. I'm sure there'll be those who try to sue the Kobe Bryant family, mainly because they have money and they want to recover. It's possible. So they could probably make a case. Not sure if it's going to win necessarily, but
those brave people, if they do that, because there's a lot of backlash. Like, you must really want that money if you're going to make that, bring that suit up.
Yeah, you don't want that Gail King heat, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Love you, Gail. Just saying. but the reports indicate that that Kobe chartered the flight, and that means that the Island Express Holding Corporation, the company, provided the aircraft and the pilot to Kobe and the other passengers for their traveling purposes. Now, what are the claims that could come about from it? Well, the claims that could come about from it is wrongful death action. So Island Express can expect a wrongful death claim from the Bryan family. And under California law, now the law is generally similar from state to state, but generally under California law, the wrongful death action can be brought by immediate family when a person has died due to negligence or wrongful act by the defendant. The family may choose to bring the wrongful death claim under the negligence theory, where there could be negligence on the part of the pilot, the helicopter manufacturer, or the aircraft owner. Now, generally, the elements for negligence is generally there is a duty of care. There is a breach of that duty. The person who committed that breach and the action of that breach was the cause of the harm, and then there was harm.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the elements. And now, the federal aviation regulations are regulations of how pilots, airplanes are supposed to be, you know, flying, and generally rules and regulations of how you fly and generally take care of flight endeavors. They generally codify the standard of care, what you're supposed to do, what you're not supposed to do. And any violation of that would be a breach of duty, would be a breach of care, and thus make them negligible for negligence. Liable for negligence. Now, in this case, the crash could have been caused by a pilot error, and it could be caused by aircraft defects. There's still an investigation going on. and the weather, and the thick fog, and they're choosing to go to that, to fly into the clouds. So those are the possible facts that they have to dive into and make a case for that. That there could be a claim of strict liability, a strict products liability. California, strict products liability can apply to aircraft. So if the crash was caused by a defect in the design of the helicopter, a defective warning, or a defect in the helicopter itself or its parts, the manufacturer or distributor will be held liable. Under strict liability theory, there is no need to prove negligence. So what does that mean? Now, I already broke down the elements where there's a duty of care, breach of that duty, all of that. But when it comes to certain products, whether it's your car, mostly traveling things, your car or a helicopter, things like that, if there is a design flaw, something that it's broken and it causes major harm, you don't need to go through those kind of elements. It came from them. It hurt you.
That's it.
Automatically yeah. liable. Now it's how much you're going to be paying, mm-hmm. you know. And generally, they're supposed to be. And we also take into consideration whether the person used it recklessly. But the thing is, it's usually the person's using it normally and then something devastating happens. And mm-hmm. the person didn't go out to break it. It's just a fault in the product that they should have tested it out and made sure it was taken care of before it was released to the public. Mm-hmm. Generally, that's why a lot of times you hear all these recalls because they try to pull it back because they might find something to make sure everybody's safe.
So wear and tear isn't a part of this, right? Like if it's a 30-year-old plane. So if after 30 years, would that be on whoever owns it that, let's say, like something wore down and it broke?
Right.
Then would that be a strict liability because the owner didn't get proper maintenance, or would you put that on Lockheed? You know what I mean? Because if I sell you a car and after 30 years you don't maintain it, mm-hmm. how is that my fault? Like it should have an owner's manual that tells you XYZ, right?
That is a very great question. And I think that's the nuance. That's a very nuanced question. Yeah, absolutely. Well, what it is that it can be determined that there is a flaw in the design. There's a flaw in the part where if the car is functioning and maintained, no matter what, it would have broken off. Generally, it'd be an investigation about it. But like, you know, if you press your brakes, it's supposed to be working. So generally, it's a flaw they build it wrong.
Right.
Like
right,
the flaw was made from jump.
Right.
All right. That's where it's going to be determined whether strict liability is applied. Now, if mm-hmm. you give it to somebody, they're supposed to maintain. Normal wear and tear is taken into consideration. But mainly it's that the fault happened from the beginning, from the selling of the vehicle, and it should have been caught or fixed or not put out there before it was out into the streams of commerce. Wear and tear stuff is normal. You don't take care of your car, that's not your problem. And generally, you know, state law requires you to put in to inspect the car to make sure everything is working properly.
Right.
So there's that. Now, there's also liability through the employee. If this air pilot was actually an employee, then that means not only they can sue the employee, but they can sue the company and the company would be liable. And that theory is respondent superior. And I explain the definition again, makes the employer liable for negligent acts of employees taken within the scope of their employment. Excuse me. In the present case, it may be concluded that the pilot was an employee of Island Express Holdings. And if the pilot was also found to have acted negligently, Island Express may be held jointly and severally liable. But the doctrine does not apply if the pilot is an independent contractor. So let me break it down. Now, I'll have to dive into what does employee and independent contractor mean, right? So when you're an employee, generally you're fully hired. You're supposed to show up at a site, work over there, take demands from the employee on day to day, and take clear direction on what you're supposed to do for your job, right? How does that differ from an independent contractor? Well, independent contractor, in the simplest terms, they're their own entity. There's like, yeah, I know you gave me a task to do and you're paying for me, but I do it on my own terms, understanding what your business needs and deadlines are, but I don't have to show up at 9 o'clock to do something and then clock out at 5 p.m. Like, right. I show up where I'm going to show up, you know, and handle it like I'm an attorney. So generally, I would be considered an independent contractor to my clients. So I would handle their legal work, how I handle it under my hours and how I do it, just make sure I meet certain deadlines and their business needs. But I am not their employee. You know what I mean? So if it's in fact that he is an employee, then he may not be liable, but then he would have to prove that difference. But if he is an employee, and he says an independent contractor, he has to prove that difference. Island, the company who serviced the aircraft, who gave the aircraft away, they would have to prove that he's an independent contractor. It's like, no, he's not an employee of ours. Mm-hmm. He does his own thing, has his own business. We don't command him to do anything for us except do certain tasks. But he's fully trained himself. We didn't train him. And he kind of has a business of his own, which he works with other companies.
But they still hired him.
So it's possible that it's going to be tough to prove. I mean, it's going to be a tough case, possibly still liable, but it is possible. But they would have to prove that he is an independent contractor. And I assume that he probably would be. But if he is an employee, and the thing is, it's factual based too, right? So if you could sign a contract that says you're an independent contractor, but if you're behaving in a manner where you're clocking in, writing schedules and stuff like that, you know, you're getting W-2s instead of W-9s and 1099s and stuff like that. Along those lines, you could be proven to be an employee if you behave like one, if there's certain facts out there that support that. So if you're an independent contractor, make sure you behave like one. So to the pilot's estate, to the helicopter company, I hope they're able to prove their case to protect themselves that this person was not an independent contractor. So, but still, regardless, I think a suit is coming to them. Mm-hmm. It's really going to hurt their business. Again, as you see here, their business is shut down. So it's pretty tough. So what are your overall thoughts about all this and maybe what you've learned today and Kobe and what's been going on, aircraft?
I think I made the right decision not getting into law. it's complicated, man. And it's, you know, it's a little bit, it's interesting to think about, right? Even after all that happens, the people who are left have to sort it out and take care of all the affairs. And that includes potentially getting messy with a lawsuit because someone should be liable for what happened. And that's what we're conditioned to believe, right? Mm-hmm. Like someone, bad thing happens, someone is to blame,
right?
Mm-hmm. So these families, they're left with the tragedy in their hands, their loved ones gone, families destroyed, and accident or not, especially for those, I think something that's a little different is, I think with all the families on there, it wasn't like you had poorer people or whatever the case may be, you know, compared to like Kobe, we all poor, right? Mm-hmm. But in terms of like, I don't know how it works with higher income families and whether or not they'd have the appetite for that. But you know, if these were like all inner city kids or something like that, or inner city families, then you know, lawyers would be on their back like, yo, I could get you this, I could get you that, let's do this, you deserve that. Mm-hmm. And it's a dirty game, right? Yeah, but I do believe this is when being an entrepreneur, your antenna should be up, because all it takes is one major event, one major catastrophic event to damage your brand, damage your reputation, and potentially put you out of business. The forefront, paramount to me, is just that nine people lost their lives, and we lost nine people who were impacting the world in their own way.
Absolutely.
So that's like paramount. But in terms of, you know, it didn't change my opinion about never wanting to fly a helicopter. In fact, it amplified it a bit, right? And just to like really, I don't know, man. It's for all the times he took that helicopter. After a while, when I remember when I first heard he was taking helicopters, I kind of was like, but you know, once he normalized it, kind of like how when I started flying more and more,
yes,
just like, you know, it literally is letting go. It's a release. Mm-hmm. I remember I was in Jamaica or Panama or somewhere, and there was like a falls, you know, that you climb, and you had to sit in one of those lifts to go up.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
At one point, I'm looking down, and I'm like miles above the earth, and I was sitting with somebody. I was laughing. I was like, "Well, if this is it, this is it. Like, I can't do nothing about it up here."
That's true.
Right?
That's true.
And that's the mentality that you have in the air. But it's funny that statistically, you're safer in the air than you are in a car.
Statistically,
you know. So it just all those things always go into mind when we have these tragedies, and you know, I think about my own life and think about everything like that. But I just hope everybody has their affairs in order, because if this goes the route of lawsuits and all of that, it could be a long and messy road.
Absolutely. You know, I don't know if the FAA would be deemed legally responsible, or the ATC. You know, generally, when it's very difficult to sue a governmental entity, it's a totally different process. You know, you have to file a claim within 90 days, stuff like that. But it's an unfortunate incident. I feel terrible for the families involved. We did lose an inspirational figure in Kobe Bryant. I hope Vanessa and the family find a way to move forward. Losing a family member is difficult, and especially losing a young daughter. And, you know, as far as the company, hopefully, I don't know, hopefully they have some kind of insurance that covers them in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they may need it for the legal fees and stuff like that. But you know, it's unfortunate. But Jeff, thank you again for coming for the episode. It was get my intro music. Yeah. And thank you again. Thank you for joining us on the episode today. We remember Kobe Bryant, Mamba mentality. You know, work hard, play hard, embrace your loved ones, cherish life. Thank you for jumping on the Hot Law Podcast. I'll see you later. Holla at your boy.